Hello, and welcome to Out on the Edge, the radio show where each week co-hosts Judy McCord, Robin Hamilton, and Betty Priu, queer elders with a combined century of lasting, loving relationships, present an all-ages tour of what it's like to be gay and gray in North Carolina in these interesting times. Today's guest is our own Judy McCord, expertly interviewed by Betty Priu herself on the multiple roller coasters of life that have gotten Judy to where she is today. Hang on, it is going to be an amazing ride. But first, we'd like to give a shout-out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro at 103.5 FM for hosting our show. Out on the Edge is brought to you by the LGBTQ Senior Resource Team of the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging. We are deeply grateful for their guidance and support. We acknowledge and honor that the town of Carrboro and surrounding land was originally part of the Saponi people's territory, which also included the Innu, Tutelo, and Sikori Nation. Please join us each week to hear our special guests share information, resources, insights, and stories for, by, and about our elders in the LGBTQ community. You can listen to the show live Monday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, or stream us, when convenient, on wcomfm.org. Our archived shows can be found on the Orange County Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/OOTE. The website also provides a host of helpful resources and services for seniors in Orange County, North Carolina. Lastly, if you'd like to ask us any questions or suggest topics for future shows, please email us at outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. Editor's note. This being our first show with no training wheels, of course, there was a glitch in saving an archival copy. So this recording is missing the first 10 minutes of the interview. We now join them in progress as Judy and Betty discuss how Judy and her husband Mac met nearly 40 years ago. They were in a chamber ensemble together, rehearsing at his house, when Mac's dog Dolly made a decision that changed everyone's future. Dolly was an Irish terrier.
It's a breed that takes no prisoners.
Okay.
You know, owner only.
Oh.
You know, you mess with my...
One person dog.
Right. You mess with my boss and you're going to suffer. You're going to... Mm-hmm, yeah. So the thing that happened that was so clearly indicative of how this relationship needed to be was when we were rehearsing, that dog sat on my feet.
Wow.
And they looked over and saw the dog and,
the dog picked you.
Yes. So the rest is pretty much history until I went home that night and I asked my husband for a divorce.
That night?
That night, yeah.
Okay, so
after
this is...
After the dog sat on my feet, it was like, oh, okay, yeah,
okay,
this is it.
Confirmation from the universe.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So we were together for 13 years as a loving and successful and wonderful lesbian couple. At that point, it was in 1999, I remember the date actually, they said, I'm supposed to be a man. And, wow. You know, that was something that came out of nowhere for mm-hmm. me, and my first thought was, what?
Even after 13 years, this was, right.
It was
a surprise.
Yeah, and I didn't know that there was such a thing as a transgender person. That was not, in fact, they didn't either.
Well, none of the TV shows right. were showing it in the 1990s.
Right. No, huh? So when that statement was made, we started sort of exploring, what are we going to be in this relationship? Who am I going to be? Who are we going to be? Are we going to be together?
Were there any people around you? I mean, now that that realization had occurred to your partner, nobody around you seemed to be trans?
Mm-mm. No. No, the first thing that we did together after that was we went to one of the, what do you call it? It's a... There's the word that is not in my head at the moment of when people gather in a place. A lot of people that share things, and they have conference. Is that the right word?
That's good. That's good. You can use it. If something else occurs to one of us, we'll pop out at you.
It was one for trans men. And it was in the D.C. area, so there were a lot of people at this thing. And
so that would have been around 1999, 2000?
2000, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. So we went, and I was shell-shocked. There was a mom there whose child was a trans man, and she had become an advocate for loved ones of trans men. And she was wonderful. She took me by the hand, sat me down over a cup of coffee, and said, "We got to talk."
Wow.
And that was my beginning of my education.
Mm-hmm.
It was a blessing to have that.
I'm glad you were in a place where you could actually access a conference like this, because I suspect that wasn't happening a lot at that point in time.
It wasn't, for sure. One of the conferences we went to was in Seattle, I think, and it was the first time we ever encountered restrooms with "y'all come on" kind of. They had to put signs on the doors, "anyone welcome in this restroom," and it was wonderful.
It wasn't binary, right?
Exactly. And there weren't any lines either.
That's even better. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It sure was. So there's all that. And we've been together as a apparently straight couple. How long? 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's a long time.
You went from straight to lesbian to straight.
Sort of. Apparently. We think of ourselves as queer at this point in time. I can't even think of us as a normal, quote-unquote, couple.
Yeah. And it's, I actually know of one other couple who went through your transition, and I think it was really kind of a little mind-boggling for the woman who did not transition, in part because I remember her laughing and saying, "I've been a big old dyke for so long, and now I'm in a straight couple." She just laughed. And that kind of shows the very gender fluid dynamics that are the reality for a lot of people these days.
My gender expression has shifted a little bit. I still identify as a woman, but my expression has shifted from being more or less femme to wearing what I want. Mm-hmm. Not having to fit into a particular box in how I present myself.
Yeah, interesting. Because my wife and I go through, we kind of move around and femme and not, and I think I'm the more butchy one most of the time, but I don't feel very butchy. So,
that's another box.
We
don't need to have boxes.
And so I guess really what I think I heard you saying is you're more you right now.
Exactly.
The you really want to be.
Exactly.
And I expect your partner is more them.
Oh, and that's a whole nother story there.
Well, I mean, can you share a little bit from your perspective?
Absolutely.
Because you're not the one who transitioned socially or physically or whatever he did, but you had to transition.
Oh, yes. I had to retire my lesbian card.
Yeah. And you had to watch him. And I don't know, did you have to rethink your relationship?
Absolutely.
In what ways? Yeah.
The thing that was pretty clear within 2 years, I would say, was that there was more available in this person for me than I'd ever suspected.
Do you mean emotionally?
And his self-confidence, his ability to walk through the world like he belonged, his ability to express himself in, oh my gosh, so many ways.
And this was even after 13 years of knowing him?
Yes. We were pretty much in boxes while we were lesbians. We did lesbian things, which is kind of weird, but what does that mean, really?
Yeah, I know. That's a whole nother show, right?
Yes.
And how does that expand when your brain expands?
Yeah. And the thing I felt more than anything, I think, was being proud to be married to this human being. I'm just thrilled. And stand up for that man wherever I was. That included having to choose between seeing my grandsons and staying with my husband. I did Christmas with my grandsons, and probably 4 or 5 years before that family said, oh, come on, y'all, we got it, and let us come in as a couple.
So you did 4 or 5 years by yourself with the grandsons, not your partner joining you?
Right.
Okay. Were they actively, were your children actively saying, don't bring that person, we think it's a bad thing
actually
to have that around our family? Go ahead.
What my son said was, I don't know how to explain him to my sons. How do I explain this?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, now I hope he's not listening. Cover your ears. I asked him, would you like to understand so that you can? And he said, nope.
So that's where he was.
Yeah, that's exactly where he was. I had to honor that and make the choice until he was ready. And he is now referring to my husband as his stepdad, which to me, when he first did that, it was like, phew.
That is pretty mind-blowing.
It is.
Do you have any sense of what changed in your son?
I'm guessing. I didn't ask him.
You can guess.
What appeared to be the case was that he got how happy I was and how comfortable I was on the planet living with the love of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it got to where he was kind of like, what the dickens am I doing? This is my mother. I think that's probably what went on for him in terms of a shift. And it's real clear. After another couple of years, when Mac and I actually got married legally, and that was before it became legal across the country for same-sex couples, because we were no longer a same-sex couple.
Okay.
So we could get married in the justice of the peace, and he had no idea who was getting married.
I wonder how many other couples they've married like that.
I know. Well, we had a celebration with family and friends, and when my son, he signed a card with his gift and the cake and all the good stuff, and the card said, thank heaven somebody let you guys get married.
Oh, wow.
So that was like, yes.
That's coming a long way.
It is. It is. And he is Mac's greatest fan at this point. When Mac is down and out, my son is with him.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm down and out, Mac is with my son. And, you know, we support each other as a triangle, shall we say.
That's great. Is your son nearby physically?
He's in Warrenton, Virginia.
Okay.
So it's close enough that I get to see him. He's not in Portland, Oregon.
Right.
Which would be a big... that would be hard.
Okay, so there's been some evolution with your son. Any other, how did things go with other family members that you want to talk about?
Sure. My brothers were totally accepting. They were totally...
From the get-go?
From the get-go. They knew Mac pretty well when he wasn't Mac. And knew how happy I was. And they're the brothers, right? They want the best for their little sister.
Right.
So they just got on the bandwagon right off the bat.
Okay.
And when Mac transitioned, they were all, yeah, I can get that.
That's pretty great.
I know.
I don't hear that story a lot. You know, we hear a lot about pain. We don't hear a lot about immediate family support. And that's, I bet there's more of that than we know about, too.
Absolutely.
That's great.
And now I know there are lots of parents who are irate that they're not allowed to support their children or that somebody thinks they shouldn't support their children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going there. Not today.
Uh-huh.
let's see, what else? I think that's pretty much the story of my relationship with Mac.
Okay. I know you and I have talked a little bit separately, and I'm curious to know if you want to talk a little bit about the evolving relationship you've had with at least one grandchild, but again, my feeling is I can ask any question. You can say, thank you, I'm not going there, and we move on.
Well, so, actually, there were rocky years with the grandsons. Mm-hmm. I have one grandson who's 33. Hard to remember.
I have a son who's around that age.
Okay. Yeah, and a grandson, the younger grandson is 22 at the moment. So they're grown-ups, struggling okay. to find their feet. And they had been in various and sundry ways with me. My elder grandson has always been my heart from the minute he was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already with Mac when he was born. So they never knew me. Neither of them knew me as anyone other than Mac's wife.
Interesting. Yeah. So they never saw you with your male, your cisgendered male husband.
Right.
So they don't have no dynamic.
Yeah. In fact, their love name for their other grandfather is Grumps.
I bet, and that's descriptive, right?
Okay. Oh, yes. Anyway, where was I going with this? The grandsons. The elder of the two lived in Portland, Oregon for I don't know how many years when he was going from being a teenager to being a young adult. And in that period of time, he was trying to find his balance in the world. And we stayed in touch, but not close. There were times when we were just really delighted to be in touch with one another and times when we didn't talk to one another at all. So mm-hmm. it really was a time period when he needed to find his balance.
Okay.
Yeah. He moved back, and he's living in Raleigh. And the minute he got back, I knew we were going to be back in touch. There's no question about that.
Okay.
And he did not get in touch with me until I got in touch with him. I met him at a craft show where he was selling his rings and things that he makes with rocks.
So this wasn't a planned meeting. It just happened.
I found out where he was going to go, and I walked up and said, hey there.
So and a little planned.
Yeah. I snuck up on him, and he went,
good.
Yeah, so it was a great, great meeting. And we've been seeing one another fairly often since then. I don't even know when it was he moved, but mm-hmm. there you are. My younger grandson is still in the process of finding his balance. And when he's in touch with me, he's just totally delightful. But there's a lot of time that he's just doing his own thing, and I get to let him be who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's totally delightful.
Yeah, I'm kind of seeing some of that with grandchildren right now, you know, in their teens. They're off figuring out what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And I figure, you know, somewhere in their 20s or 30s, you know, we're still connecting now, but I think we'll be able to connect more later once they have their ways kind of defined.
Yeah. Once they discover we've always had their back.
Well put.
Yeah.
Gosh, well, it sounds like you've had a lot of happiness in not just the way your relationship evolved, but also how your family has seen how happy you are.
Yeah.
Seen that you're in love, and that's what it's about.
I couldn't hide that if I tried.
Yeah. And
you know that.
Yeah. And I know if you were miserable, that would just be flowing off of you, because that's just how it is.
Exactly.
You know, we can't really hide how we really feel.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Wow. Thank you for all the good, happy stories, because,
we got to have them.
It's not what we get in a lot of the, drama and plays and stuff.
Absolutely. We have to lift one another up. We have to hug one another and listen to one another mm-hmm. and celebrate one another.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what's keeping me sane right now. If I look at the other side of it, I'm gone and irate and enraged. So I've not gone there.
Yeah, I understand what you feel. And then every once in a while, I get this little thing that goes, okay, you know it's all about love. You know. Being love and,
Exactly.
And that's what I've been hearing from you this whole time. So this kind of leads in, though. You were talking about how you're interacting with the world a little bit. And, I'm wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about, your advocacy for LGBTQ plus rights, maybe broadly and or maybe in one-on-one. You know, because I've had the privilege of talking with you over a few years, and I've heard, you know, you are fierce advocating for
your family.
For your family and for these folks standing out there, you know, in front of your table at the Pride event, talking with them about come and get a grandma hug. And, I mean, that's advocating all of it.
Oh, yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about how you got to that. And you alluded to that with your mentor at the first trans conference.
But yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
When we were a lesbian couple, I felt like an advocate because I had a good relationship, a good life, and I wanted to reach out and do what I could to improve, to support folks that didn't have it so good. And that's where I started working with PFLAG. We had a chapter that we founded in Winchester, Virginia.
And PFLAG, for those who might not know, is...
It's a national, may even be international, organization that provides support, education, and advocacy for everyone in the queer community and their allies.
Right. I think the
parents
original...
and families, essentially, to begin with.
Yeah, of lesbians and gays. That was the early forum that I ran into in the 80s, I think.
Right, right. In the early 2000s, they included trans people. That's when the T arrived.
It took that long,
yes,
though.
Yes, it did. And it was after that that HRC added trans to their mission.
So early 2000s?
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like a long time, really. But,
exactly,
you know, I mean, I've been in the lesbian community, or whatever that is, for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. And we never, you know, it was gay and lesbian. Trans were not, you know, the initial was there, but nobody ever talked about it.
Exactly.
And I knew no one. So I'm not surprised. I'm kind of surprised, but not totally surprised to hear that even in national organizations, it took till the 2000s, what, about 25 years ago, for the T to be taken seriously.
Right.
Okay. So that's, what kind of work did you do with them?
Well, I started out as chapter leader in Winchester.
And that's in Virginia?
Yes.
Okay.
We had maybe 3 or 4 people starting out, and we ended up with about 30 people involved with us, not at every meeting, but involved with us in terms of the committee work and doing the treasury stuff. And there were a lot of people who needed and wanted connection with, you know, with their community.
Yeah, what kind of folks would come? I mean, was it just transgendered folks, or was
it this was parents of all of the queer alphabet.
Okay.
So it was 4 parents, but it also became 4 gay and lesbian and trans folks who don't have parents who support them. So they started coming to be around parents who cared, have kind of a substitute mom or grandmom.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably remains the best thing about PFLAG.
Okay.
It's still in, it has maybe 300 chapters across the country. When before Mac transitioned, I became the regional director for, I forget what states, but that was something I did, and went to D.C. for meetings, and eventually became a member of the board of directors. And then I got hired.
Okay.
So I started, I believe it was in 2004, it was the year I got my snake bite. I remember that. Oh, Lord have mercy.
Well, that's one of those big life events you don't forget.
It is. And the reason I got to start working for PFLAG was I wanted to go in for an interview. I heard that it was opening, and I really wanted to apply for it.
And
but
you
had
been working with them for what, 10
couple
years?
Years.
Just
couple
a few
years?
Years?
Yeah.
Okay.
It started in about 97, my work with PFLAG. So this was in 2004, July the 29th. I was bitten by a copperhead on my ankle.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of neat stuff around that shouldn't be neat because it was a snake bite. But when I was bitten, I was walking out of the house, out of the kitchen, to the deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see the snake there. You don't look for a snake right outside your door.
Right.
So I kicked it. And it said, oh, no, you didn't. And it followed me back into the house.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh. It was quite the event.
And so, you probably had people and dogs in your house.
I had dogs, no people.
Okay.
I was totally in charge of the dogs.
Okay.
There was a lot of getting stuff organized. But the end result was that I was in bed with my foot up when I did my interview for the job.
Okay.
And I got the job.
Okay.
So I thanked the snake. And I have a tattoo of my snake on my ankle.
Okay. Okay.
It's all, you know. So the goods and bads about everything, aren't they?
It worked out. It worked out.
Yeah.
So how long did you work for PFLAG?
I worked with them for about 5 years. I was the Safe Schools Coordinator for the whole country, which means I provided education and workshops and all kinds of things, you know, by phone support, mm-hmm. and in person.
And Safe Schools was geared at high school kind of things?
All ages, yeah. I remember having conferences with elementary school teachers who had absolutely no idea what to do if they had a youngster, you know, somebody under the age of 10. Who absolutely knew they were transgender,
and
the parents didn't and wouldn't accept it. So I had to coach them in how do you take care of this child without leaving the parents out,
mm-hmm.
without, what's the word I want, without calling them liars is what comes to mind, but that's not the...
It's not exactly where you're going.
Right. But I don't know what words are.
Right, keeping the parents ignorant or, you know, and sometimes parents are not safe.
Oh, yes.
I mean, because I...
You're seeing it now.
Yeah.
And it was there then, yeah.
Yeah, because I think sometimes kids come out probably more to their friends at school, you know, socially, friends and teachers. I mean, I've seen that happen, and it's a positive thing. And I've seen them do that before parents and grandparents.
Right.
It's
in many cases, it's the support that they get at school that helps them figure out how to come out to their parents.
Yeah.
What's the best way to talk to my mom about this?
Yeah.
And that really, that's important.
I think it is, too, because I don't, there was a part of me that used to think that it's easier for kids to come out now, and that's not true.
No.
You know, what's true is it's a different process for everyone.
Exactly.
And especially for young kids who realize that they're different and are starting to find words to articulate it, even younger than some of us did. You know, it's a scary process still.
It is, absolutely.
Because they don't see themselves in, mm-hmm. everyday life very much.
True.
So
we did training workshops for teachers and parents. We do have PFLAG chapters who would have their leaders come together with us, if I had a partner, mm-hmm. on the trip with me. And it was the most exhilarating work I've ever done. It was also the most excruciating.
Why excruciating?
I talked with so many people who had experiences with their children and students that were horrifying. What parents would say or do to keep their children from being who they really were. And what teachers were doing at that point. Some. Most of the ones that I saw were really hungry for how can I take care of this kid.
Right.
And, you know, the parents that came to the PFLAG meetings certainly were that parent as well.
Right.
They want to take care of their kids. They want to provide support. And they want to make sure the child is safe.
And they want
all of
they
that.
Believe their child.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that was exhilarating to be able to say, okay, here's what might work. This has worked in the past. Here are some films you can see. There was I can't remember all the details, but there was a woman in California who had a production company, and mm-hmm. she produced films about gay kids, about trans kids, about how they're navigating their lives in school.
I had no idea.
It was amazing, amazing. I'll get the details to you. And I actually did a lot of promotion for those films in my workshops.
Were they available through PFLAG, or did PFLAG provide a list? Because I know they probably still have a strong online presence, right?
Oh, they do. PFLAG does, for sure.
Right.
The production company, I'm not sure it's still working, running. The woman who founded it passed away, and it's kind of the company went in different directions.
Right.
So I'll get it to you. It will come to mind.
Oh, and that's okay. And I'm just thinking, though, if somebody were really curious, maybe the PFLAG website would have information.
Well, they do have a lot of information.
Right.
PFLAG.org.
And it's PFLAG.org. Good. Because it's still vital.
Oh, yes. And they have a wealth of information for anybody and everybody. People who want to be allies, people who want to set up a support system in their hometown, that kind of thing. All of that.
And I would imagine Safe Schools materials are still available there right now, too.
Yes. Some of them are the ones I wrote, and some of them aren't.
Oh, that's cool. So I didn't realize you had written some of that material.
It has evolved over the years since I left, and they have a much stronger presence in the schools now than they did.
That's good to know with all the, you know, maybe that's going to be one of those front lines.
Oh, I hope so.
Right now, you know, keeping kids safe and parents safe with all the people trying to push back on freedom. Really,
exactly.
Freedom to be who you really are.
Yeah,
is really
exactly
what it comes down to.
Yep.
Well, thanks for sharing your history about PFLAG. So I guess you've shifted a bit then. You're not active in that?
I'm not active as an employee.
Right.
I'm not on the board. I attend meetings from time to time as a resource. There's one in Rocky Mount, and there's one in the Triangle area, and I don't know where else. Greensboro, I think there's one there.
But there are meetings available, chapters.
Oh, yes.
Well, this
is
good for people to know who might be hearing this.
Absolutely.
That you could look for PFLAG meetups in your area.
There's a PFLAG Triangle that you can look up on the PFLAG site, and they'll give you the contact information for that.
That's great to know. So for people who especially want to be allies, or who have family or friends who are gay, they might.
Or grannies who just want to provide hugs.
Yeah.
That's important. That is so important.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's great. So now you do more advocacy in real life, in everyday situations, I would guess.
Yes, and with the seniors in Orange County, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's where I have found, at least at this point in my life, I've found my home advocating for my community at senior center events.
Right, which is really, I know we're all three involved in the senior resource team for the LGBTQ community with the Orange County Department on Aging. And I know I'm also very grateful that we can be such an obvious, you know, loud presence, you know, and help folks gather socially as well as educational events, things like that.
Right.
That's
great. Yeah, I think what I said 2 years ago when I did my first interview on this wonderful radio station, I was asked what I wanted people to know, people in my community, to know about what's going on at the Seymour Center. And I said, well, you know what? Things are really nasty out there. I just want them to know they can come out and play.
Good. Good. And we do things to play, right?
We do.
I know we've got some things coming up, like a movie and potluck events at the Seymour Center in Chapel Hill. We're going to be doing, in October, a big picnic at Blackwood Park out between Chapel Hill and Hillsboro, and that's going to be an all-afternoon event. We'll be talking about this on future shows because we'd like, you know, LGBTQ, AI plus, and allies to just come and join us and have a lovely day. So we'll talk more
there
about
is
that.
All of that. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glancing at things we talked about, and I wonder, you know, we can get maybe a little personal about, you know, you've gone through a lot. You've given us a really story of a lot of different yous, is what it sounds like, and in relationship in yourself. So How is your own experience of yourself and your self-confidence and your expression changed over, like, say, the last 50 years? Because I, you know,
there, yes.
Take that where you want.
Yeah, that, excuse me. If I were to spend it 3 minutes talking about that, I think it would be easier for me to do, rather than going back 50 years and saying, there was this and there was that.
Take it.
When I was in my heterosexual relationship with my first husband, I did not feel at all free. I was the wife. I actually was more than the wife. My particular husband looked to me to make the living. So, and when I had our baby, it was my toy. And so my first husband, you probably have guessed, was not a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did not experience a lot of joy being a woman and being in love. I did not. That was not part of that experience.
Yeah.
When I met, I did do some church going during that period of time, primarily the Unitarian Church where we were. And I loved the people I met there, and I had just a wonderful time sharing my life. And my talents and my time. And when I claimed my gayness, I felt that since I was on the vestry and a part of the leaders in the church, I felt like I really should tell the pastor that, you know, this has happened.
Okay.
I now am with a woman, not with my man anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into his office and I shared with him, and he said, "Whoa, I'm really, really disappointed."
What?
And I said, "What?" He said, "I always thought you was a very sensual woman." And I was, what? You said what?
That's kind of a surprise coming.
It is.
Yeah.
Like, being a lesbian would make me less sensual. And I had exactly the opposite reaction to that change in my life.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it definitely tainted my experience in church.
It didn't. It almost sounds like he was reacting from himself,
exactly.
Not really listening to you.
Exactly, which is not what you want from your pastor.
Right.
And no. Uh-uh. So I kind of moved away from that particular church.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not active with a church now. I don't think I have been probably in the past 30 years.
Okay.
It's not important to me. It really isn't. I have a very full life, and I have a very spiritual connection with my planet and with my people. It's very satisfying, exactly what I have now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you're making me want to ask, so you used that word spiritual. For you, what does that mean today?
It means I trust the universe to take care of me. As long as I pay attention to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of in a, you know, a short,
in
a short bit. Yeah.
And it sounds like you find that your spirituality in your relationships with people in your life, with the earth.
Yeah.
I probably your dogs, right?
Oh, yes.
Because we know they're just beings in fursuits, that's all.
Yeah, they are. They are. Yeah. The other thing that kind of connects me with my family is my relationship with the earth. My grandson, Addison, told me at one point that I had affected his experience of the world by teaching him to look where he was walking. He's a rock hound. And I've always been a rock hound. And when he told me that, it was like, yes, he's my boy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been just a treat, watching him use that particular gift to make jewelry and to make a living.
Wow. So that came out. Did you actually look for rocks and stones with him when he was a little kid?
Yeah. When he was 9, I think he and I went for our first rock hounding trip.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, you know, I remember finding rocks across where they lived, across the street, where there was construction going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over, and we were kind of, you know, looking at the the dirt and the rocks, and I said, oh, look, this is greenstone. Look, it's everywhere. Yeah, and he said, oh, cool, let's get some.
So, and you said, like, today he makes jewelry?
Yeah.
So I guess the seeds that were you walking around pulling things out of the dirt with him.
Oh, yeah. He actually took a trash can that had wheels and filled it up with greenstone, rolled it back across the street, and made a garden wall for his mom.
Wow.
Is that cool?
I mean, it was literally like big chunks of greenstone.
Oh, yeah. Greenstone is one of the, I don't know if it's as good as granite, but it's a building block of stone.
What part of the country was this?
Virginia.
Okay.
You can find it around here, too, I'm pretty sure.
Uh-huh.
But they just had hit a nice strata of greenstone. Mm-hmm. And that was it was like Christmas for us.
It would have made a beautiful wall.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my God.
Isn't that cool?
And that was like his first creation of stone, too, then.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Neat. That's great.
He's just such a treat.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful human being.
Well, like I said earlier, it's great to hear about your connections with the kids, you know.
All right. Can you hear me? Is this thing on?
Yes.
We have about 5 or 6 minutes left, and I think because we missed it last time, Judy wanted to do a wrap-up, and I think she probably wanted to talk about our 20 questions ask the old queer lady.
Thank you.
Thing
good.
For outontheedgeradio@gmail.com.
Yes.
Yeah, before that, I want to say, Judy, thank you for being so forthcoming with details about your life. I find it always heartening to hear people talk about living into their joy, and it sounds like that's what you've done.
It has been. It has been quite a trip for me. What I'm looking for right now is a piece of paper that had a bunch of wonderful quotes on it.
Oh, okay.
I know.
We'll figure it out.
Hold on.
Yeah,
hold that thought. Not that one. Here we go. This is a quote that I want to share with everybody. James Baldwin said this, and it just really strikes me as where we need to be right now for one another. The longer I live, the more deeply I learn that love, whether we call it friendship or family or romance, is the work of mirroring and magnifying each other's light. Gentle work, steadfast work, life-saving work in those moments when life and shame and sorrow occlude our own light from our view. But there is still a clear-eyed, loving person to beam it back. In our best moments, we are that person for one another.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to WCOM-FM at 103.5 for hosting this show. I also want to acknowledge the Orange County Department on Aging for their support. And may I repeat, send us an email. Anything you want, anything you need, let us know. If you have ideas for shows that you would like to do, if you have questions about things we've talked about, if you need support, go for it. Give us an email. We'll get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for listening. Yeah.